You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Alana Bartol. Alana, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
Alana, we're going to talk about your work today, but of course we're also talking at this kind of unusual time, June 18th in 2020. You're in Calgary. What's happening in your studio, or what are you working on at the moment, if we can just jump right into that?
Yeah, sure. I have a number of projects going on right now, but one that I've been working on for a number of years that relates really directly to what's happening in Alberta and the oil and gas industry is called the Orphan Well Adoption Agency, and that's an ongoing artwork, and it's really looking at ways to ask the public to examine concepts of care and accountability and responsibility in the oil and gas industry. And so it's a project that I started about 3 years ago now, and I was interested in understanding what an orphan well was, and I had moved to Alberta in 2015. I had never heard of orphan wells, and I think I heard a radio show or something like that, and they were talking about orphan wells, and I was just thought that was really kind of a funny way to name these wells, and so that sort of kicked off what started out as a curiosity in trying to understand this term and what these wells are, and it's led me to just 3 years of research and going to orphan well sites and learning about the regulatory bodies of the oil and gas industry in Alberta and the policies, and really looking at the lack of accountability and transparency and really responsibility of the oil and gas industry. So the orphan wells, which are scattered across the province, and I know that there's orphan wells in the United States too, so it's not unique to Canada, but as defined by the Alberta Energy Regulator, which is the provincial regulator for the oil and gas industry in our province, it's an oil or gas well site, and they've been confirmed that they no longer have any legally responsible or financially able party to deal with cleaning up the site, so abandoning the site and reclaiming the land. So these sites are contaminated. They threaten to contaminate land, the water, even the air, and of course this can affect.
But wait, so how do they become abandoned? They're created, they're used by can you walk me through their process, the oil industry?
And sure.
I can't understand how that's not traceable and they can't be held accountable for that. I mean, just to understand this process a little bit.
Yeah. So basically the company that owned the site has gone bankrupt. So there is a orphan well association, which I kind of intentionally played off of that name with my Orphan Well Adoption Agency, which is my art project. And that association is responsible in the province of Alberta for managing the abandonment of these oil and gas orphan well sites. So they remediate them. But the energy regulator oversees, it's 449,000 wells have been drilled in the province in the last century. So that's a lot of wells. And as of March in 2020, there were approximately 95,000 inactive wells. So those aren't orphan wells. They're wells that they're no longer producing for whatever reason. It could be economic reasons, or it could be some sort of technical reason with the site. So those are also problem wells. It's not just the orphan wells, and this is something, I was learning through my research. So it's not just orphan wells we have to be worried about. It's all of these wells that are just sitting there. They're still owned by companies. Many
of them. So what happens to those wells? How do they poison the environment?
Well, there can be different chemicals and combinations of drilling fluids that are just sitting in the wells, and they're no longer serviced by anyone, right? There's no owner of the site. Sometimes, you know, there's different processes happening. Like, say, a company's gone bankrupt, and another company's going to purchase that company's wells, and they're going to buy up the orphan wells along with the active wells. So this could take a long time. Or sometimes they just sit there, and the orphan well association doesn't have enough resources or people or money in this orphan well levy fund that the industry pays into. So there's not even enough money to clean up these sites. And this is a huge, there's so much in the news recently about this, just in the past couple of months, because since the pandemic started and since the oil and gas industry has been hit very hard, and this is sort of the quote-unquote lifeblood of this province, the federal government has injected $1.7 billion to help clean up orphaned and abandoned oil and gas wells in not only Alberta, but also Saskatchewan and British Columbia. So, this program will create jobs but there's, I've been researching this for a while, and there are a lot of papers and research produced, and that the estimates to clean up all of the liabilities in Alberta are much, much higher than just $1.7 billion. They're actually, anywhere from like $40 billion, potentially higher. And there's problems with gathering the data and the transparency, and the cost to clean up these sites can really vary per site. So, for example, like one site might cost, maybe it's only $10,000 to remediate it, because you have to remove all the equipment. You have to test the soil to see if it's contaminated. You might have to test groundwater. Pipes could be leaking. Sometimes methane gas is leaking into the air. So there might be various types of testing that needs to be done to just even assess, what needs to be done to clean up this site. And that can take a while, and then you might have to remove soil, might have to remove equipment. So there's different people throughout that cleanup process that get contracted to do different parts of the process. And these sites should be cleaned up, right? Because, like I said, they could potentially be contaminating. You don't necessarily know if they're contaminating your land or not. Maybe sometimes you could smell, something, but most of the time you can't really know. I've met with a lot of landowners who have these wells on their land, and it's a huge issue for them. Many of them are farmers, so they sit in the middle of, their livelihood, their field. The industry maintains service roads which go to these sites, so that, allows them to access the site, to maintain it, to, get whatever they need from the site. And so, once the owner of the site is gone, these service roads become unmaintained. Sometimes they're just mud. You can't even drive down them. And there's just, I've been to a number of different sites, which I document through my artwork. So I photograph the sites, and they all look very different. Like, sometimes there'll be a pump jack there, sometimes it's a gas well, so it looks like, a bunch of pipes. Sometimes there's small buildings, there's equipment left. They look very abandoned. There's, rusty metal sticking out of the ground. Of course, you're not supposed to trespass on these sites, but if you're a landowner, you have this site on your land, you can't get it cleaned up. They turn to surface rights groups a lot of the time, which are groups that have formed throughout the province to, they are landowners themselves, and usually they've had experience dealing with oil and gas companies. And they kind of provide resources and assistance. Sometimes they might be able to connect them with lawyers if they're going through like court battles to try and get this site cleaned up that they're dealing with. And yeah, it's a huge problem, and I really had no idea before I started investigating it. So I've learned a lot.
So tell me how you showed. So maybe talk about the last show where you present some of that, because of course it's using a variety of media. Can you walk mm-hmm. us through just one installation of the Adoption Agency exhibition, if I'm saying that correctly?
Yes. So it's the Orphan Well Adoption Agency. So when I initially started the project, I usually start an artwork with a lot of questions, and sort of the project unfolds throughout the process. And I work in a lot of different media, and I'm really interested in exploring a concept through whatever tools and materials make sense. So for this project, I've done drawings, photographs. I've created an interactive installation where people can actually physically come into the Orphan Well Adoption Agency off-site office, which gets put up in the gallery. So sometimes that's actually a physical office structure that gets built in the gallery space. And I hire people to work for the organization. And I train them, and they learn about orphan wells, and they learn about the related issues. And I have, you know, photographs of different orphan well sites that I've visited. And I developed an adoption process. So they actually, the representatives will interview people that come into the office if they are interested in symbolically adopting an orphan well. So really trying to look at the language that the industry is using to talk about these sites and to bring up questions of care around these sites. And so how do we really remediate these sites, and why aren't they being remediated? Why have they been neglected? So there's a lot of humor in the work. Obviously, I'm somewhat, you know, you're not really adopting the site, but
you're raising awareness, of course, and trying to pursue more research and find a solution ultimately, ideally.
Yeah, exactly. And so, so some of the questions are kind of related to one's knowledge of orphan wells. Some people, you know, aren't aware of what they are, that they exist. And then some of them are a little bit more humorous. So, for example, one question is, your prospective well has and continues to go through a period of inactivity. Adopted wells may act out during the early days of adoption, causing spills or leaks from deterioration or lack of proper upkeep. Many of our wells have experienced distress from lack of care and attention. If a behavioral problem arises, what steps would you take to address it? So, you know, the potential new caretaker of that well is sort of like left with this question. And the answers are really interesting, and it leads to some great conversations, you know, about this issue. And then once people finish the adoption interview, if they're approved, they get a postcard of a orphan well, and they also get a certificate of adoption. And on that certificate, an actual well site, orphan well site in Alberta, is listed on there. So if they wanted to, they could actually go online and look up on a map where their orphan well is located. So it's kind of another point of connection between people and these sites, which a lot of the time, especially in a city, you know, these sites they're not usually near cities. A lot of them are in rural areas, so it's not something that I think is in the everyday public consciousness, even though so many people in the city are, you know, well, in a way we're all connected to this industry, right? We're all
right.
Kind of entangled and reliant on it still. So, Yeah, so it seemed like this was a good way into having these conversations in a time of ecological crisis, and even talking about that can be quite a contentious issue sometimes here in Alberta.
So tell me about, there's other things going on, but you also did a dowsing and digging project. Is there another project that you're working on now that you want to mention?
Oh, yeah. So I am starting a new project. That's with the University of Lethbridge Art Gallery, and I'll be doing a residency with them over the next few months.
That's the Dowsing and Digging Project, correct?
Yeah. So I started a website. It should be going live fairly soon. So it's dowsinganddigging.com. And with that project, I'm still really exploring questions around environmental remediation, which, you know, has started many years ago in my art practice, but that's also something that I'm looking at with the Orphan Well Project, and this idea of remediation of land that has been damaged or polluted or contaminated in some way by human activity, and so how do we repair it? And is it just about repairing that site? Or how does it connect to bigger questions happening right now in our world? For example, reconciliation and really thinking about how we can't just address these problems in a very siloed way. It has to be part of bigger, more in-depth, difficult conversations that we need to have in order to really change how we think about our relationship to the environment and especially what we call natural resources, which even that term in and of itself kind of implies that things like water, oil, or minerals are existing solely for human consumption and exploitation. So really trying to interrogate a colonial worldview and think about, you know, how do we have these conversations right now?
And how is that working? That residency is upcoming, but of course we're in the middle of the pandemic. What's the plan for this residency? Can you do it from home, or will you be going to the University of Lethbridge?
Yeah, it's definitely shifted because initially I was going to be going to the university, but that's not possible right now. So so I am going to be visiting a number of different smaller sites, and some that the university owns, the Coote Center for Western Heritage. I just got back from a trip to the Crow's Nest Pass in Alberta, which has a really fascinating history of coal mining, which initially was something that, I was kind of investigating, and it seems like more and more that that might become a focus of this project, is looking at that coal mining history and connecting it to current discussions around climate change.
It's really interesting, and thank you so much for talking with me about your work, and I wish you well with the rest of it, because it's so important, and I hope all the listeners will also look at all the links that are here to get more involved as well. And I want to ask you one more question, which is, what are you reading at the moment?
Well, I just got a really great book. It's a collection of short stories by Octavia Butler. I'm a really big science fiction fan, and if you haven't read Octavia Butler, her writing's amazing, and this collection's kind of unique because I think it might be all of the short stories that have been written by her, and I guess I won't say too much about it because I don't want to ruin it for people, but I just read Blood Child, and it's a very kind of disturbing but really interesting way to think about relationships with other people and kind of flipping the idea of pregnancy and who can get pregnant and sort of relationships with the living non-human world. And so she talks about alien-human relationships in that story. It's really fascinating.
So interesting. Bloodchild by Octavia Butler. Elena, I want to thank you so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure. I wish you well. And again, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.